The conference is now being recorded.
Welcome to the final quarter financial year 2017, NAOS Emerging Opportunities Company Limited Investing Conference Call. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS Asset Management Limited. Please go ahead, Sebastian.
Many thanks for that introduction, and thank you everyone for dialing in today at a slightly later time than usual. As usual, all the documents or the presentation material has been lodged with the ASX about an hour ago. I'll be referring to that document. Some people have also emailed us some questions this time, and we do, obviously, people will get the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call as well. So, as always, I'll kick off probably with the most important slide, being slide 5, and that is the performance. This presentation might be slightly longer than usual, obviously, because it's an end of financial year call as well as just the usual quarterly call. So for the quarter, the fund was down 2.59% versus Small Ordinaries Index, which fell negative 0.35%. And for the year, the fund was up almost 12.4% versus the index, which was up 7%. And as per my commentary in the month end, I think, you know, it was very much a tale of two halves for this fund, unfortunately. I think, you know, we were on track. We did approximately about 16% positive for the performance for the first half, and then finished down about 2.5% to 3% for the second half of the year. And a lot of that was driven by, as I mentioned, probably our three largest holdings, unfortunately. So BSA almost finished on its highs for the half. And there's obviously going through a consolidation phase where a lot of people sort of assess the impact of NBN and whether or not they can make that into profitable work. The second one was Consolidated Operating Group, which was all the old AIK, obviously completed a very large capital raising, and it's probably the second one this year, so there's a lot of indigestion around. And once again, I think the market's waiting for a first full set of accounts in a consolidated format away from that LIC structure, get a feel for the underlying profitability, the balance sheet, the earnings growth, and the potential for cash flow and dividends. And then finally, the last one, which is a bit out of the ordinary, was M&F Group. So obviously people until this month but would have noticed been under a lot of pressure, and you know, it's public knowledge that, you know, the second largest shareholder, obviously apart from us, had two fund managers leave, and that fund's been under significant redemption pressure, and they've been forced to sell that shareholding in a very prompt manner and probably an unorderly manner, which placed a lot of pressure on the share price. But pleasingly, that share price has now bounced from, I think, $4.20 back to almost $4.80 or $4.90. But all in all, it placed a lot of pressure on the second half of the year, and hence why I suppose that first half of the year didn't really carry through into a stronger result. But pleasingly, we still outperformed, but not as close, obviously, to that figure of, you know, the 15 to 20 that we like to get over a rolling three-year view. Looking at the portfolio structure, still very much focused on that small/micro-cap end of the market with an average market cap of $135 million. And the risk metrics still look strong. So even though we only hold about 10 stocks, we still have many more positive months in the small odds. We have lower standard deviation and also a lower downside deviation. So once again, proving that theory that just because you own fewer stocks doesn't mean you're more risky in the market, especially when you look at risk-adjusted returns as well. Slide 6 is the contribution summary for the fund since inception, so obviously now over 4 years. Not a lot has really changed, it's just probably a few of the figures, so obviously COG would have come off slightly, and maybe one or two might have fallen out as well. But I suppose what we're trying to show from this slide is we still get a lot of industry exposure across a diverse range of industries as opposed to what you would find in the ASX 100, for example. Slide 7 just looks at the return profile month by month by return and gives you, in our view, the most transparency any investor would require, not just annualised return tables. And just looks at this, obviously you want to see more returns to the left and higher as opposed to the right, where you want to see fewer and I suppose less significant negative returns, which was what we tried to do here. And that's about capital preservation, and then obviously growing our returns over time. Slide 8, you know, it's been a big focus for this business for a long time, looking at capital management and the structure of the business. So obviously the shares and issue have increased over the past 3 months to almost 60 million shares. The director shareholdings have also increased slightly to almost 4 million shares. The pre-tax NTA is $1.31 and the share price is $1.33, I think, or maybe $1.35.5 today. And the fully franked dividend yield based on the last dividends we've paid on a full-year basis is about 5.26% fully franked at the share price of the NTA. So pleasingly, we've been able to hold that, you know, slight premium to NTA. And hopefully we can continue that going forward. The dividend profile, once again, obviously nothing's changed. Just to be clear, we'll announce our results most likely in the third week of August, I believe. So we'll announce a full audited set of accounts as opposed to an unaudited set and then an audited set in September. Along with that, we will declare our dividend dates and the size of the dividend in the third week of August. Slide 10, once again, just looks at the director shareholding since IPO. Obviously, have all increased, so I will not touch on that in any great detail. Slide 11 is a little bit topical, because I think we did get one question on this, and I'll just speak to that now. Just asking, one of the questions was, you know, post the raising of funds, everyone likes to ask, you know, are you raising funds obviously just to make the fund bigger, but can you put those funds to work in opportunities that you think can provide good risk-adjusted return? And based on this chart, you can see that our net equity exposure is back to 98.7%. I can safely say that almost all of those funds have been put to work, you know, maybe bar a few $100,000. So when you're considering we raised $16 million, you know, the investment team can say that we're just not sitting on the cash to run a cash management trust. We're here to invest the money in what we feel are good returns or good opportunities that should generate solid returns over the longer term. And I'm happy to go through that probably in a little bit more detail in the pack. Once again, by industry, you can see as an industrial-focused fund and I suppose investment team, you know, diversified financials, consumer services, telecommunications, materials, that's probably more split between probably more building materials. So I don't want people to think of iron ore and uranium mines. We could probably make that a little bit more specific, but that would be more our holding in Big River Group, which is a building materials business in New South Wales. Company meetings on slide 13, they're always a little bit different for NTC because we do see some rather interesting smaller businesses that are listed on the ASX. And even for myself, over the past 6 months, it doesn't cease to amaze me how many new businesses are popping up, albeit probably not in our end of the spectrum. They're a lot more technology-based. Seems to be the theme of the year. But, you know, still some interesting businesses out there. So Tempo Australia, that's a new contracting business that's now run by the former CEO of Clough, which is a big contracting business that got taken over a couple of years ago in Western Australia in the oil and gas space. So just a small business with a proven management team looking to do the same again, either by acquisition or organic growth. Another one, Big River Group, we already own, which is that new IPO only of about 3 months ago, I believe. Godfrey's Group, everyone would know, the retailer of vacuum cleaners. DWS Group was probably topical as well. They were looking to do a merger with SMX, which was, beaten or overturned at the last minute due from a competing bid by a Japanese firm, so it'll be interesting to see how they progress post that deal falling over. Kogan, many people will probably use Kogan.com, but you know, an interesting stock that floundered post the IPO, but pleasingly for them, they've broken through that IPO price for the first time since listing. And just a few, you can see a few probably stocks that were once market darling, such as Capital Honey, for example, Surf Stitch, Vita Life Science is another good example of, you know, once upon a time a market darling, but it has some probably rather fast, aggressive share price falls and, you know, looking just to consolidate their business and probably reassess their strategy for some of those. But without a doubt, plenty of opportunities out there, especially in the small and micro cap space. And as most people would know, the small cap and, you know, maybe micro cap space to a larger extent has been, you know, a difficult place to invest over the past 6 months. You know, the appetite has not been there, and as I said 6 months ago, which probably pushed the valuations up 6 months ago, is a lot of our larger peers have probably viewed the micro-cap space as an opportunity to expand their product line, but what they've done is they've probably taken themselves out of their expertise, realised that, you know, it's actually a lot riskier and harder to achieve solid returns, and now they've pulled out of the space, and what that leaves you with is a lot of forced selling and a lot of distressed selling in micro caps and small caps, and it takes time to work through that indigestion, and we've seen that a lot over the past 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And to be honest, we're still seeing some of it. Slide 14 looks at the market outlook, and there are probably a couple more slides in here, obviously, because the year ended as well. So I'll try and give as much detail as I can, as I know people like to talk about stocks. And this just looks at the update for the quarter for a couple of stocks in NCC. So the major positive one, and one we've probably owned for a very long time now, was the Nero Group. So they announced that they've done a recapitalisation or capital structure change whereby they've done a deal with the last remaining vendors of some businesses that acquired many, many, many years ago. And this allows them to pay dividends, acquire businesses, and also do stock buybacks. So with this, Nero announced a 5-cent special dividend, which was paid at the very end of June, and it allows, gives them a lot more flexibility going forward to really focus on their strategy and obviously fund that strategy going forward. They'll continue to hold a large net cash balance sheet, which we expect to be used to fund maybe either acquisitions and dividends. And I think it's key for this business is to really show the market that they can grow organically as well. Once again, it's very poorly understood by the market. Most of their brands, if not all their brands, bar one, are based overseas. But I think an interesting article that we tweeted the other day, so people can go and have a look at that on our website or Twitter account, that essentially the large firm in the US acquired a competitor of Eniro's, or BMF, which is one of the Eniro businesses here, for $63 million for a business that does $4 million in EBITDA. It wouldn't be too similar from a BMF, we would have thought. And when you highlight the market cap of Eniro's $100 million with $35 million in cash, it assumes you're getting the other likes of Hotwire PR, you know, the Leading Edge, and some of the other Eniro businesses for free. But it does highlight that the likes of Deloitte, Accenture, PwC have been buying up a lot of these creative agencies because they want to offer their clients an end-to-end solution, not just one, I suppose, disinvolved in regards to solutions. They really want to control the whole process. They want to do the marketing. They want to do sort of the cloud piece, the technology piece, the media buying. They really want to get into it all. And to do that, they need to acquire businesses such as Eniro. And unfortunately, when you look at the landscape, there's not many independent businesses left. A lot of them are owned by the big global holding companies. So we think it's a big year for Eniro. It's always been a big year for them, but we think finally they've got a clean slate. And if they can show the market that they can grow the business and then some of the clients that they work with, I think it definitely has higher to go. A new one for NCC, one which we've been working on building a position in for a long time now, so it is rather illiquid, is Biotech Capital. So I'm sure a lot of people have rolled their eyes when they hear the word biotech. But one of the reasons why we're here is it's run by a gentleman called Richard Tregus. So he was the former CEO of Acrux, which was a healthcare business, still is a healthcare business here in Australia. You know, took that, I can remember, from a 20-cent stock at one stage almost to $3.50 over a 3 or 4 year view, so very highly regarded. Importantly, Biotech Capital is a pooled development fund, so there's, under certain circumstances, there's no tax paid on income or capital gains to the shareholder. And what we like about this business is it is not a biotech company, as per the name. It is a healthcare business that's looking to partner with businesses that have proven drugs and mainly devices. But when you have a proven drug and device, obviously you need to sell that. And to sell it, you need a team based in that region. Now, not all healthcare companies have a team based in Sydney in Australia or in some of the Asian countries here around us or in other Pacific countries. So they're willing to partner with people who are proven, have the right connections and capabilities, such as Biotech Capital, in return for a royalty. So I'll give you my device that does X, Y, and Z, and for if it's $1,000 and you sell one of them, then I will give you, you know, a slice of that $1,000 to cover your costs and plus the gross margin. So a low risk business that over time, if they can find the right partners and deals and devices, does have the potential to scale significantly. But most importantly, it doesn't have the risk of clinical trials, FDA approvals, TGA approvals. It's a low risk way of getting into that healthcare space. In our view, we're a healthcare space in Australia. There's very few high quality businesses run by high quality management teams. Not to mention that Richard himself owns about 18% of the stock, which is obviously accumulated over the past couple of years. So only a small position because it's a small business, but one which we think has the potential to be something very significant over the longer term. Just touching on the year in review for NCC, so I'll start with the positives and then finish with the areas or room for improvement. Pleasingly, our best performer for the fund was actually CML Group. CML Group's a factoring or financing business, receivables financing business. People would, many 3 years ago, would remember they had some dark times in regards to an MD leaving and then reappointing himself and just going through a few growing pains, as many small businesses do, but pleasingly we were able to stick around and double the size of our position over that time. And pleasingly for them, they've been able to consolidate the business, consolidate on acquisitions, lower their cost of funds and achieve, you know, strong organic growth that we believe is sustainable. But more importantly, the market is now able to understand, and you've seen through some other, you know, funds building positions and other brokers initiating that there is some sustainable growth here for the next 12 to 24 months that can, you know, really significantly increase the profitability of this business. So it was a very pleasing year for that business. In Euro Group, as I mentioned, we believe that's a positive outcome, albeit probably didn't show as much of the share price as we thought. And then in that third point, as I said, you know, most if not all the funds from the NCC placement and SPP have been put to work, and they've been put to work in new stocks such as Big River, which is a very large position core holding for this business. We've also added to MyNet Fund, as I said, in the recent sell-off that occurred, you know, rather quickly. And then we've also added to a couple of other positions such as Wingara and Biotech Capital, which are sort of two of the newer positions in this fund. And I think it's important that we really try to focus on, yes, people would know us for our five sort of core positions, but I think, you know, we've been working very hard at building almost like a bench or some new ideas that we believe can turn into those core positions over time. So, you know, we live and breathe ideas in this business, and they're the things that eventuate or become the performance of the fund and shareholder returns. I think, you know, ideas aren't generated, in our view, for our philosophy, over 2 minutes. They eventuate over many months and many years. And I think you gain comfort and understanding for what someone's trying to accomplish, and hopefully you can accumulate along the way. And that's what we're trying to do with some of those smaller positions. Areas for improvement. So obviously we're not perfect, and it definitely was not a perfect year. I think with this business, we're always going to have issues in regards to timing. When you have as big a position as us in some of these positions, some will go up, some will go down, some will go sideways for 3 years. And unfortunately, timing can be a big factor in your overall performance, and that's something I think we can definitely improve upon, especially myself. And I think, you know, we also probably underestimate the time it takes for other funds and investors to get comfortable with a business or even just to know a business. I think some of the feedback we've got from, you know, MyNet Fund, for example, they've been initiated on by one of the larger brokers in Australia. And, you know, and you're surprised how many funds actually don't even know what MNF Group does, even though it's a $350 million company. And that does obviously hurt us, because obviously you need to be more patient to get that PE expansion. You know, you might stop a business from being 10 times, but then going to 15 times, because you get most of your leverage and most of your return, not just in the earnings growth, but in the PE re-rate from going from a micro small cap to a mid cap, or hopefully even a large cap. And then the third point is, you know, really understanding, you know, the pressure on management teams to execute, you know, to, I suppose, fund that execution, so the capital requirements, and then obviously then the time it takes, and obviously some of the time delays. It's not easy running a public company, it's hard running even a private company. But unfortunately, when you run a business, it just doesn't seem to always fall into a 30 June year-end, financial year-end. So unfortunately, something might fall into July, and then you've got to wait another 12 months to release, you know, what is hopefully a better set of accounts before the market will give you the benefit of the doubt. Slide 18 just looks at some industry, or I suppose the market commentary and what we're seeing. And as I mentioned in the NAT call, I'm not a market expert, definitely not a macro expert, but I do think it's worth touching on, even though we are definitely a bottom-up fundamental focus manager. So there's definitely been a lot more focus on the reflation trade, rightly or wrongly. I think you see a lot of market and so-called experts again, who, you know, we're all talking about deflation 6 months ago, and now we're talking about reflation. The RBA is talking about 3.5% interest rate levels yesterday, and what that means for the market and specific industries. There's a chart on the next slide which looks at, you know, some industries have been under significant pressure of late, especially as this reflation trade has, I suppose, taken more of the headlines much recently. There's been a lot of false starts in regards to this trade. I think people have been talking about the reflation trade now probably for 3 years. So you know, it may or may not eventuate, but as I've shown you in this chart, almost in the same time last year, probably a little bit later in the year, in September, we went through a similar scenario. The important point for investors is, well, how does it affect my investments? And I think, you know, people look at some of the basics, so it leads to higher debt servicing costs, potential for increased wage costs. We haven't seen that. Now, as I mentioned, you know, the fact that, you know, for example, things like unions aren't as large and influencing like they used to be. So, you know, that puts, I suppose, less pressure on wage costs, increasing bond yields and the potential for lower asset prices, you know, as the risk-free rate rises. And then obviously, you know, different asset classes being, I suppose, valued on different risk-free rates. So it would be, what's a REIT worth today at a yield of 2%? What would it be worth if yields were 4%? The other big factor, though, was a qualitative factor. And, well, what does a higher risk-free rate mean for PEs? So if there's less, I suppose, risky money in the market, then are people willing to pay 20 times for a stock that does 20% earnings growth? Or does that now fall to 18 or 17% because the risk-free rate has increased and therefore more money will float into, I suppose, risk-free assets such as government bonds? And that's the big unknown, and that's what, as fund managers, you need to sort of mitigate through investing in businesses that hopefully are growing sustainably on more reasonable PEs that are hopefully less well understood by the wider market. The other side of the argument, and no one seems to talk about this is obviously rates normally rise when there's in times of expected or current strong economic growth. And then how does that affect business revenue? How does it affect margins, expansion and the like? But obviously that should be a positive. And I've also got a slide in here that, you know, anecdotal evidence of that occurring hopefully in the future. Just on slide, here's the paper, slide 19, just looking at that industry performance. So the highlighted lines are the purple, the two orange ones, and then the white line. And the white one looks at industrial, then you've got the orange being the real estate sector or REITs. The utilities in purple, and then finally another orange one being healthcare. And what they all have in common is there's been significant underperformance since the beginning of May. And it shows you healthcare is obviously a high PE sector, REITs and utilities are very interest rate sensitive, and then industrials is really the outlier in my view. So it's either telling you that there's some of the higher PE stocks, or they're telling you that the economy is rather soft and the earnings growth hasn't been there, so therefore PEs and share prices are derating. The key for this chart is, does it continue? And as I said, in September, June to September last year, the same thing happened, but then it obviously bounced again and recovered. It will be interesting to see whether or not this continues to have legs and that reflation trade, you know, does hold effect. Slide 20, just a new chart that was only released yesterday, and goes back to the, you know, sort of the domestic market economic outlook, and this is released by CIMIC, which is the largest contracting business or construction business in Australia. And it's a chart they released looking at major transport infrastructure projects in Australia. And what you can see is it's expected to top out at about $17 billion in 2020 off a base of roughly $5 billion this year. And you can see about 80% of those projects are in New South Wales, And the important thing is it's a very large scale project that will most likely take longer and probably be more expensive and require more resources. But if a lot of these works do occur, it does show you, and a lot of the feedback we're getting is yes, there is a slowdown in the apartment sector and building sector in that regard. When you look at some of these infrastructure projects and even office buildings and even where we work here in Martin Place, the redoing of Martin Place, there is a lot of large-scale commercial work and infrastructure work around. And if this work does eventuate, there will be some clearly companies that benefit a lot. So what does it mean for NAOS in, I suppose, FY18, another financial year, is, as we say all the time, is we just stick to what we always do, and that's focus on the controllable. We look for businesses with existing revenue streams, the ability to drive revenue and or margin, balance sheet flexibility for a rainy day, obviously if things don't go according to plan, and then look for businesses that are obviously based on, valued on today's earnings or a flat earnings profile. But if you look 3 years out, what would they be worth and is there any potential to profit from that? We like proven management teams with strong shareholder alignment. And then we as well as our supposed investments, we want everyone to stick to their core competency. Stick to what you're good at, stick to what you understand and where you've clearly benefited before. To finish off, just on the last two slides, just there you can see there's 10 different ways you can stay in contact with NAOS if you so wish. And then finally, a final slide on the team. And there will be a new team member joining NAOS next month. So I'll have an update for you, hopefully at the next quarterly conference call. So with that, I'd like to open it to questions, if there are any.
Thanks, Sebastian. Guests are now invited to ask questions by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. You'll be placed in a queue. Please listen for your name and I'll introduce you through to the call. Sebastian, at this stage, we do not have any questions.
Okay, I've just got two quick emails here, so I'll try and read out most of the questions because some of them are quite long. So the first one's just a question in regards to two stocks, one's UCW and one's Namoy Cotton. So obviously, I want to make this very clear that we can't advise on stocks and whether or not they're a buyer or a seller or a holder or whatever they may be. So in regards to UCW, we're aware of the business. One of the PMs has met with them. And to be fair, we don't have a view as of yet. It's probably a little bit early for us, and we'd like to see some, the strategy eventuate and see them execute. Secondly, Namoy Cotton, we've also met with more recently. I think that's an interesting business in regards to both the cotton price, water rights, and businesses which then go from that more co-op structure to a corporatized structure. So that's probably an interesting business that may present an opportunity, but obviously at the same time very complicated, and I'll be interested to see how the returns flow through to shareholders. The second question was on Lindsay Group. Literally, that's probably quite a long question, but at the end of the day, it's really just asking for my thoughts more generally. And our thoughts probably haven't changed. I think there's a lot of tailwinds for that business in regards to Australia becoming a food bowl for Asia, and obviously Lindsay Group trucking a lot of that fresh fruit and vegetable and hopefully exporting it as well. So a clear tailwind. The clear negatives are automotive holdings and their issues and whether or not they put their foot off, I suppose, price deflation and competing on price alone, which obviously puts pressure on revenues and Lindsay being able to keep clients and obviously get new clients at fair prices. And then at the same time, obviously, capital management. So how can they manage the dividend, the balance sheet, and then also I suppose potential acquisitions or even more capital expenditure, which they've spent an awful lot of money over the past few years trying to find the balance between free cash flow, payout ratios and sustaining capex is key for that business. There's a clear tailwind behind that business. So if you do have any more questions, please feel free to email them to myself or any member of the team, or you can even call us directly and we're happy to chat over the phone as well. But thank you again for your support over FY17. We hope we have another good year or even a better year next year, and we do appreciate everyone for their support and patience over the past 12 months. So thanks again and enjoy the rest of your day.